You all set, Kate? Okay, John, take it over.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and we're here today to make final approval on Framework 8. As you know, this is a jointly managed stock, so whatever we do here will go down to the Mid-Atlantic in a couple of weeks for approval as well, and that may play into some of our discussion here today. We've got four decisions to make, really four general areas, setting the days at sea and catch limits for the northern and southern areas, as well as a couple of other issues, one on a permit H where they can fish and the other on days at sea usage. We had a hearing on January the 10th, a very robust and active hearing, and I'm going to turn it over to Kate O'Keefe, or Dr. Kate O'Keefe, to make a presentation, and then during the course of the presentation, we'll take up some of the motions. In introducing Dr. O'Keefe, I first want to thank Doug Crystal and Chris Kellogg in Phil Herring's absence. They really stepped up to the plate on this committee. And Dr. O'Keefe is here as a contract employee from SMAST, but has a long history in the industry, and that wildly successful yellowtail avoidance program that we often hear about is her program, and she just defended her PhD on it in August. So welcome, Dr. O'Keefe, and it's all yours.
Thank you, John. So to start, I'm just going to go through the documents that were distributed. This is the document number one presentation. Document number two is the decision table. Document three is a summary of that Monkfish Committee AP meeting John mentioned. Document four is on the web. That is the draft Framework 8 specification document, which includes the SAFE report. Document five is the Monkfish Landings and Days at Sea allocation analysis. That's the basis for the projections for all of the north and south alternatives. And document six is revenue analysis. That's the economic impact. And then seven is just an initial summary of social impacts, which we really won't discuss in detail. So just to provide the purpose and need for what this framework is doing, ultimately we're trying to modify days at sea allocations and possession limits for the monkfish fishery, trying to consider revisions to days at sea allocations and trip limits to achieve but not exceed catch limits based on the updated assessment. The real need for this was that the TAL has not been reached in recent years, ultimately not reaching optimum yield. Also to increase operational flexibility to permit Category H vessels, and those vessels allocated monkfish only days at sea. Just a brief background, since this document has been a little bit long in the making. There was an updated assessment for monkfish in 2013. This was updated from the 2010 SARC 50 assessment. This assessment concluded that both stock components remain not overfished, with no overfishing occurring. Based on those results, the SSC recommended no changes to ABC and ACL, but did recommend reducing OFL for both the northern and southern management areas by 9% in the north and 36% in the south. Amendment 5 is what the current southern management area alternatives come from. That's the status quo for southern. And Framework 7 is the status quo for the northern. These would be automatically extended unless they're modified, so Framework 8 is needed to change fishing year 2014 to 16 specifications. In terms of ABC, ACL, ACT, and TAL, there was a discussion at the committee level, so that's why there's a little background on this. Basically, the SSC made those recommendations to maintain status quo ABC and ACL. The Monkfish Committee did consider a 14% management uncertainty buffer to include in Framework 8. After a lot of discussion, the committee decided not to change the current management buffers. These buffers that are currently in place, 13.5% in the north and 6.5% in the south, have not posed any risk of exceeding the ACLs. However, the committee did recommend to continue analysis of the management uncertainty buffers as future actions develop. So based on that, what we're looking at in terms of setting projections for the 2014 to 16 fishing years, the September Council meeting, you guys approved a motion to approve the range of alternatives, basically just to set days at sea and trip limits, not to change management buffers or any of these catch limits. So the catch limits that will go forward, other than the updated SSC OFL, are status quo. That's this table that you can see. The TAL at the bottom of each of those columns in the northern management area and the southern management area, those are the TALs that are used to make the projections for days at sea allocations and trip limit increases. So moving right into decisions 1 and 2, this is going to be days at sea allocations and trip limit changes for the northern and southern management areas. There's a little bit of background on how these projections were made and how the alternatives were designed. Basically, they were designed to increase efficient utilization of the monkfish resource to fully harvest but not exceed catch limits. There was an analysis conducted by regional office staff to modify days at sea and trip limits based on 2012 catch levels. So that's important to note. There's a couple of assumptions in this analysis, the first being that fishing patterns will be assumed to remain constant from 2012 levels. So there's in the projections for 2014 to 16, 2012 was used as the baseline year. Next is that landings will proportionately increase based on the 2012 effort and landings trends, meaning that by area and by fishery, whether directed or incidental, increases will be proportionate based on 2012. And finally, that only recently active vessels will continue to participate in the fishery. There are some caveats with using 2012 as the baseline. First, that Hurricane Sandy had some influences on fishing effort, specifically in the southern region. Also, that reduced groundfish allocations potentially had influences on fishing effort in the northern and southern regions. Also, as a baseline for comparison here, so that you understand what we're talking about when we say 2012 is the baseline, the idea here was to increase days at sea and or trip limits to a level at which the projected landings would approximate the 2014 to 16 directed fishery allocation of the TALs. So looking at this chart, you can see what was allocated in fishing year 2012, the target TAL, at just about 13 million pounds in the northern area and just under 20 million pounds in the southern area. Of that, only 67% was caught in the north and only 58% caught in the south. So the idea is to increase days at sea and or trip limits to try to reach the TAL. We're not changing the TAL. The next part to look at is the landings type, whether it's directed or incidental. There's two opposite things that go on here. In the north, 75% of the total area landings were taken in incidental. And in the south, the directed fishery made up 75%. So when we think about the alternatives that will come up in the next couple of slides, that's why there's differences between incidental trip increases in the north versus south and directed trip increases in the south versus north. I'm going to hand this one over to Doug. He put this information together.
Thank you, Kate. There was a lot of questions coming up at the committee meeting in terms of the influence of the 2013 emergency action on monkfish operations. As you may recall, in January of last year, the New England Council had requested the agency implement an emergency action to increase monkfish catch while on a groundfish day at sea or groundfish trip. And so in May 1st, we implemented a management measure that would exempt vessels fishing under a Category C or D monkfish permit from the monkfish trip limits when fishing under a monkfish day. And this was based primarily on a concern expressed by the Mid-Atlantic Council of a potential shift in effort from the north to the south through the additional ability to target monkfish under the emergency action. We considered public comments, and in October, we implemented a revised emergency action that suspended monkfish trip limits for all Category C and D vessels, regardless of whether they were operating under a monkfish day or a groundfish day in the northern area. The premise behind that was that there wasn't any evidence that the effort shift was occurring and that vessels were using their monkfish days in the south as opposed to the north. So with that, the current trends, as you can see here on the slide, in the south, the monkfish trends are following almost exactly what the landings patterns have been in 2012 with a slight uptick in November, whereas the landings patterns in the north have actually been below the 2012 trend. So it appears that the emergency action did not really affect the landings to date in the northern area. So with that as our basis, we are considering that as a transition period between 2012 and where we're going to be starting May 1st.
Thanks, Doug. And we hope that that answers some of the questions about using 2012 as a baseline in terms of those caveats that I had mentioned before. So to go through the alternatives, I'm going to go through the alternatives for the north, give a little bit of explanation, the alternatives for the south, and then go through the impacts, and then we'll pause for motions on each one of the areas. So first, in the north, the alternatives, I think you all have the document in front of you. Number one is the no-action alternative. All of these alternatives, just to note, the directed landing limits do not change. They remain status quo. The differences between the no action and the other alternatives is a change in the incidental landing limit or a change in days at sea. The first two, alternative number two and alternative number three, were in the original document. Alternative number three, which we're calling committee revised, was revised at the committee meeting. The committee made a motion to substitute the original alternative three with the revised alternative three. We've left them in the document here so you can see all of them. So ultimately, it's changing incidental landing limit to 600 pounds for this should be updated. It's only C permit. And 500 pounds for D permit. The rest of the incidental landing limits for other permits would remain the same. The other part of the alternatives is either increasing days at sea to 64 with status quo incidental landing limit, increasing to 53 with the increased incidental landing limit, or the committee revised alternative, which increases the incidental landing limit and maintains status quo days at sea. Some input on this from the committee and the AP. They revised the alternative three to maintain that status quo days at sea at 40, but increase incidental landing limits, realizing that 75% of the landings in the northern area do come from the incidental landings. Also, that the day at sea allocation in the north currently has not been fully utilized, and therefore there was concern and some questions raised about the potential of why would there need to be an increase in days at sea above the status quo of 40. So ultimately, the AP and committee recommended the revised alternative three, which increased incidental trip limits, maintained status quo directed trip limits, and maintained 40 days status quo as their preferred. For decision two in the south, again, there's four alternatives here, first being no action. In all of these alternatives, the incidental landing limit remains status quo. There would be no changes. The changes here would be increasing the directed daily landing limit or increasing days at sea. The increase in the directed daily landing limit, there's two different types of increases here. In alternatives 2, 3, and revised 4, it goes from 550 to 610 for A and C permits and 450 to 500 for B, D, and H permits. This slight increase is really to correct for the tail-to-whole fish conversion factor. There was an analysis done that there was about a 14% loss in doing this tail-to-whole fish conversion. This was discovered recently. So this increase really is not increasing the directed daily landing limit. It's correcting for a weight conversion factor. The one alternative, alternative 4, does have an actual increase in directed daily landing limits up to 1,000 pounds and 860 pounds. The input on this was that the committee revised the two alternatives, alternative 2 and alternative 4, recognizing that they did not want to increase potentially the directed trip limits as high as 1,000 or 860, but potentially to increase days at sea slightly above status quo, from going from 28 to 32. And again, just to mention that the increased trip limits are just a correction for the tail-to-whole weight conversion. The AP and committee recommended the revised alternative 2 with increased trip limits and 40 days at sea as preferred. Oh, that should say 32 days at sea. Sorry about that. So in terms of biological impacts, there's really no change in the status of the stock. Therefore, all of these alternatives were designed to meet but not exceed the ACT. Continuing to not reach the ACT and under harvest potentially could increase the size of the stock over time, but none of the alternatives really have additional biological impacts than the status quo because none of the catch limits are being changed. I'm going to let Doug talk about protected species.
So as you may recall, 2012, we had issued an indication that Atlantic sturgeon is listed as endangered and threatened for different distinct population segments throughout the East Coast. And public comments were taken. The analysis was evaluated. Additional analysis was conducted based in part on the state survey, NEMAP survey. And the conclusion were updated to increase the population estimates. And the recent biological opinion was released in December 16th, I believe, which indicated that there are no additional management measures coming down for Atlantic sturgeon, at least not in the monkfish fishery. There are some reasonable and prudent measures likely, including increased monitoring and resuscitation efforts, but nothing that would directly affect fishing operations. So with that, there is no need to consider those type of issues in this framework at this time, but it depends on the updated stock assessment, which my understanding is being conducted by the ASMFC.
Thanks, Doug. So looking a little bit at economic impacts between these two decisions, we're looking at the no action as the lower bound of any of the economic impacts. Basically, that would be status quo, and we used 2012 as the baseline for the projection for any of the new alternatives. So just by looking in the SAFE report, you can see the information from the 2012 fishing year. This is just a table showing landings by home port and revenues by home port and landings and revenue over time in the fishery. So 2012 actually serves as a lower bound in the economic impact analysis. The economic impact analysis that you have in front of you, which is document number 6, there was an analysis done by Science Center staff to look at revenue streams by home port and by vessel length class for each one of the alternatives alone and then each of the alternatives in combination. In this analysis, there were some assumptions made, the first being that the full TAL would be harvested. The next is this price flexibility assumption. What this means is there will be a percent change in price given a 1% change in landings for monkfish. An analysis was completed by different Science Center staff, published in 2013. Lee and Thunberg found that there would be a negative 0.41% change in price given a 1% change in landings specifically for monkfish. So in order to look at projected revenues, you have to include the price flexibility assumption. So a projected increase in landings that on the magnitude that we're looking at in any of these alternatives is much larger than the increase in landings that Lee and Thunberg used in their analysis. Therefore, this is likely an overestimate, the negative 0.41. So ultimately, the conclusion from the analysis with this assumption is that this represents an upper bound of change between the 2012 revenues and the projected 2014 to 16. So just to reiterate that status quo, the no action alternative, would represent your lower bound of economic change. This would represent your upper bound. So anything in between here is more likely the reality of what would come out of these fishing allocations. In terms of area impacts, again, we have to look at this price flexibility assumption. Increasing landings will result in a lower X vessel price based on the price flexibility assumption. Prices are correlated across ports so that increased landings in one area will decrease price in all areas, regardless if you took action only in the north and chose no action in the south. So it's more realistic to look at the paired comparisons of alternatives. They represent the most likely changes in revenues. These are tables 8 through 13 in document number 6. There are two sets of tables in document 6. First is home port, second is vessel length class. They all have the same numbering system. The most important thing to note here, though, is that overall revenues most likely will increase due to additional landings despite the decreased price. So just looking at one example without going through that entire document of revenues, we looked at the comparison of the committee revised alternative 3 from the north and committee revised alternative 2 from the south. This combination was chosen as the preferred from the committee and AP. This resulted in a moderate increase in revenues for all ports aggregated of about 9.25% and revenue increases across all but one small secondary port. This also resulted in moderate increases in revenue for all vessel size classes from 12% to 15.5%. Other of the alternatives in combination did have greater increases in overall revenues in terms of aggregated ports, but with far more disproportionate impacts across ports and vessel size classes. And again, that's based on the correlated prices across ports and changing allocations in one area impacting other areas. So that is where we could take a break. And
thank you, Kate and Doug. Are there questions for Kate and Doug? Laura.
Thank you for your presentation. Can you go back to the committee decisions on the northern area? So where it says the AP and committee recommended revised alternative 3, can you shed some light? Was that a unanimous, or how did that vote go?
Yep, that's included in the committee summary, and the way that that went was there was an initial action to substitute a motion in to change the increase the days to 46 and increase trip limits to the 600 and 500. That motion failed. The vote was 3-3 to 1.
John?
This is for Doug or Kate. It's a good presentation. On the slide that talked about the northern area, incidental, 75% landed with incidental. That puzzles me, I guess. Incidental doesn't seem to be correct terminology, if 75%. So I suspect there's more to it than that. And that may be more that we're not naming the days correctly. Is this a case of trips that are partially targeting monkfish and then targeting groundfish, but they're all being allocated to groundfish, and so we're categorizing them as incidental? What's going on here? Because I can't believe that 75% of monkfish is being incidentally caught.
I'm going to defer to Doug on this because I think it has a lot to do with the history of the management plan.
Yes, that's correct. The origination of the FMP was that incidental landings, so landings of monkfish that were not directly targeting monkfish, would be taken off the top first. And so when the FMP was created, a majority of the landings from the northern area comes from directed groundfish trips. And so what my understanding of the last couple of years is that, particularly, is that vessels go out on a groundfish trip, they have a certain threshold of monkfish landings that are considered incidental. In other words, that's not the predominance of the catch. And if you exceed that, then you have the opportunity to declare a monkfish trip and therefore more specifically target monkfish. And because the FMPs are joint, anytime you use a monkfish day, you automatically use a groundfish day. So majority of the landings are labeled incidental is because they're not fishing under a monkfish day at sea in the north. They're sufficiently low and within the existing incidental limit of 300 pounds per day at sea, such that the vessels don't need to use a monkfish day at sea to land that amount. This action would change those incidental limits to potentially increase it up to 600 pounds per day at sea.
David.
So could I just quickly follow up? So does that mean that next time we're going to find that even more than 75% of monkfish is going to be caught incidentally?
That's a possibility. If the limits are raised and there are fewer incentives to use a monkfish day, it could be that a greater proportion of the monkfish landings from the northern area come from monkfish days. It's really unclear what that threshold is which constitutes an incidental versus a directed. What motivates somebody to fish under a monkfish day versus catch lesser amounts of monkfish? And the data are not really definitive in attributing a reason for that behavior.
I mean, this may not be important at all because what we're trying to do is get up to where we're catching the quota. So this may be just arguing about words that really aren't meaningful, so I don't want to pursue it. But
David, Dr. Pierce.
Kate, in your presentation, you indicated that for the northern management area, the days at sea allocation currently is not being fully utilized. I don't think you said why, but maybe you did and I missed it. Would you elaborate?
I'm going to defer to Doug again. There are several potential reasons, and there's really not a definitive answer to that. And I think that that's part of why we're not exactly sure how to get there, whether it is an increase in days at sea or an increase in incidental trip limits. So that's really what the framework is trying to address.
Yes. Based on information that was conveyed at the committee meetings, there's a certain level at which an individual thinks it's the monkfish catch that they're currently harvesting under normal operations is sufficient to warrant the use of a monkfish day. The monkfish has an allocation of 40 days across the region, and so there's a perception that there are valuable where in the early or late winter and early spring, when monkfish are most prevalent in the Gulf of Maine, the northern fishery management area, there's a potential that the industry wants to use those days for that period where they can focus on monkfish. And throughout the year, they can get along with using the incidental limits. So perhaps some of the northern area vessels can correct me, but there doesn't really seem to be a definitive reason why the full day at sea allocations are not used. Most likely, it's because they're fishing predominantly on groundfish, and then the monkfish does not constitute a higher proportion of their catch in general.
In the alternatives before us, shown in Decision 1 in the presentation, we see Alternative 3 and then the committee revised Alternative 3. And the difference between the two would be days at sea available for the AC and the BD permits. My question is, did concern about sturgeon play any role in... Maybe I'm jumping ahead of myself here, but I'll ask it anyways. Did the concern about sturgeon in any way impact decisions regarding why one alternative would be favored over another? Specifically, I'm thinking that with the lower days at sea, there might be less concern about sturgeon take. So did sturgeon play any role? I know you mentioned sturgeon in your presentation, but I just need to know if it played a role.
It was brought up. The biological opinion was released on December 16th in advance of our January 10th meeting. So the committee was informed that the biological opinion does not require any additional changes to management measures to reduce the take of sturgeon. But there was concern, at least expressed casually, that there was excessive effort in either area may increase the likelihood of interactions with protected species at general, whether it's Atlantic sturgeon or harbor porpoise. So those two concerns were expressed in terms of opening the door and dramatically increasing the effort, particularly in the southern area. For example, we have alternatives that would have gone up to 50 days in the south, and that one of the reasons expressed for not going that far in terms of increasing the allocation was interactions with protected species.
Okay, thank you. That clarifies. And finally, did the analysis done for these particular alternatives indicate that one alternative or the other would favor gill netting over trawling? Was there any specific outcome with the analysis? For example, with the committee revised alternative 3, the preferred would the reduced days at sea have a greater impact on the gill net fishery as opposed to the trawl fishery?
Historically, there's most of the landings in the northern area come from trawl gear. It's a very low proportion of gillnet active vessels in the northern area, whereas the inverse is true in the southern area, where there's much greater percentage of landings are attributed to gillnet gear. So each area's measures will affect those vessels based on the predominance of the gear usage in the area. But generally, it's trawl vessels in the north, gillnet in the south.
Terry.
Yeah, I just wanted to address the incidental catch. So over the history of the fishery, I mean, I think incidental is kind of a bad word for it, but that's what we call it. So it isn't incidental. The groundfish fishery is highly dependent on the income from the monkfish. And most of our time is spent now, when we're fishing under days at sea, trying to manage those days at sea to utilize the most income out of those days at sea.
You mean
monkfish days? Yeah, and groundfish days at sea. But so we would use our groundfish days at sea in the summertime and wait till the winter when the weather got crappy, and when it was blowing 15, you could go out in the deep water and try to utilize your monk days at sea. That's how we used to do it. It's not really incidental. It's an important component of the groundfish fishery in the north. So it's kind of disingenuous to call it incidental, I guess, because we're highly dependent on it. It's a good portion of our income. It's probably 20% of the money that we gross in the course of a year. So.
Other questions? Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think to that point, I think that does raise some questions about the way this plan is set up with the use of days at sea. And with the current structure of the incidental trip limit, together with the incentives that have been discussed around the use of a day at sea, that seems to create a scenario in which discards occur. So I think the committee's proposed modification of the incidental limit would convert some of those current discards into landings. I think that's a positive thing, but it still seems to leave some lingering questions about the use of days at sea in the fishery and why the utilization is so low. And it seems like there might be other opportunities to explore how to incentivize individuals to actually utilize that day at sea as it relates to trying to attain the overall TAC. But I would just offer, it seems like there have been significant concerns expressed at the committee level, at least within the Mid-Atlantic and among the members of the AP, about any options that might lead to increased effort in the southern area. And I think some of that has revolved around some concerns about potential implications for protected resources. So, for example, it's not just the sturgeon, but also harbor porpoises. And there's been a longstanding sensitivity to that. The fleet in the Mid-Atlantic that directs on these with the gillnet fishery has evolved its practices significantly over time. I think they've gotten to be quite effective at avoiding those types of interactions. And there's concern that if the effort increased significantly, you could be back in a situation where there are significant protected resources concerns. They definitely want to avoid that in the southern management area. So, I think that's some of the background, at least in the Mid-Atlantic relative to the options. But I look forward to the deliberation of the committee motions. Thanks.
Okay, Matt, then I'm going to go to the audience, and then John's going to put a motion up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to reiterate Chairman Roberts' concerns and thank Doug and Kate also for a really well-prepared presentation. Just to highlight, and I highlighted this at the committee meeting, that I just wanted to remind people that we're working off of an update assessment. And if you look at the May 2013 update assessment on pages 96 for the northern area and page 104 for the southern area, it shows that stock biomass in the final run in both areas is a very strong retrospective pattern. And so I think it's a precautionary tale needs to be there. This is a data-poor stock. The SSC has recommended reductions in the OFLs, and we're working with an update assessment just before, at the several years removed from a benchmark, and we do have a benchmark scheduled in the future. But I just wanted to put that on the record that that's what we're working with here.
Yeah, a bunch more hands went up, but Tom first.
Kate, would it be possible to put up the slide with the ABCs, ACLs? That I just want to point out that with respect to the uncertainty in the assessment, there's a pretty good-sized gap between our OFLs and our ACTs for these stocks. In the northern area, the OFL is over 17,000 metric tons, and our ACT that we're targeting is 6,500. And in the southern area, it's 23,000, and our ACT is 11,000. So, these are more than 50% gaps between the OFL and the ACT, which I think is probably larger than just about any of our other management plans.
Mary Beth?
Thank you for that question, Tom, because it does seem that, relative to scientific uncertainty, whether it be a retrospective pattern or other issues, that this buffer would be more than adequate to account for that. And the purpose of this framework is to try to provide the tools to the industry to reach OY or at least reach the ACT that's set out for this fishery. And the question, what I really raised my hand for initially, was that we've heard about this concern in the southern management area about increased effort. And is there any evidence in the analysis that the PDT has done that has occurred? I mean, it seemed like that's been a theme for a number of years that this, because of the reduction in the groundfish fishery in New England, which has been ongoing for, goodness, quite some time now that effort would increase in the southern management area. Is there any evidence that that did occur or evidence? I mean, you did show landings, and so the landings would indicate, well, no, but landings don't necessarily indicate effort by, you know, displacement from other fisheries.
No, there's not, and I'll let Doug clarify if he feels the need to. He put this information together this week, and the analysis he looked at was several different parameters to look at just that, whether or not effort is increasing by area, by active vessels and days at sea used. And in the southern area, it's been fairly stable since 2009. The most recent data we have is through the end of the 2012 fishing year, but it has remained fairly stable in that entire time period. So there's no evidence to indicate that there's increased effort in the last 4 or 5 years.
So just a quick follow-up. I mean, I think it was mentioned in an earlier agenda item that we get a lot of correspondence and we get a lot of comments, and if we could try, we need to listen to those comments and make questions and ask for analysis. But I think it's been done here, and it indicates that that effort shift has not occurred.
Terry.
Yeah, I think Tom spoke to my point about how we're only fishing one-third of the OFL now. I don't know how much more cautious we could be with a SOC other than shut it down completely. So that's, you know.
Drew.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. Be careful, Kate. You might talk yourself into a full-time job. I have a question about the preferred alternative. My understanding is that all vessels qualified under the same exact criteria, regardless of gear type, to qualify for an A, B, C, or D permit. That's correct, right? Doug is nodding yes. And we've never before given different allocations to vessels depending on what other fishery they were in, say, Agassi. The reason I ask is, a lot of scallop vessels have sea permits as well. And with this preferred alternative, we are only allowing groundfish vessels with a sea permit to allocate a higher allocation. And my understanding is that every other sea permit has a lower allocation. And my question is, have we ever done this before in the monkfish plan? And also the question for Gene, is this would this constitute a major reallocation, and can we do this in a framework?
I don't know. I'd have to look at – I'm not prepared to answer that off the top of my head. We'd have to look at exactly what – whether this is contemplated as a possible type of framework. If it is a reallocation, probably not frameworkable.
I
don't want to get a definitive answer just off the top of my head without studying this a little more.
Well, I would ask that whatever time is necessary for you to do that, because this is the preferred alternative. And this, if passed – would substantially reduce the sea permit in the hands of a scalloper as compared to anyone else, and basically create two tiers of sea permits, even though they all qualify in the same exact fashion, and they wouldn't be the same going forward. And so I don't believe we've ever done this before. Doug can probably answer that question.
To some extent, there already exists somewhat of a difference between groundfish incidental trip limits and scallop incidental trip limits, in that scallops are across the board 300 pounds per day at sea, whereas the groundfish incidental trip limits in the existing regs are 25% of the total weight of fish on board, or up to not to exceed 300 pounds. So we already have a difference, a slight difference, but a difference between the incidental limits in the groundfish fishery versus the scallop. And then there's also an incidental difference between gear types down south. So to some degree, the incidental limits already have some differentiation. Although it's not species-specific in the south, it's gear-specific. In the north, slight differences between FMPs.
Okay, well, that is helpful, but this seems to be a very rapid departure from that. And an extensive reallocation of who can catch monkfish on the same permit. And we're not opposed to people increasing incidental catch, and we want to get rid of discards too. We share that goal. We just don't want to see one class of sea permits be put into a second-tier status as compared to another. So if we're going to do it for everyone, let's do it that way rather than differentiating. And I don't see the harm to the fishery, especially when we still aren't catching anywhere near the ACT at this time.
Jim.
Jim Audlin, owner of five groundfish vessels in the fish in the northern management area. Excuse me, I have a cold. Doug, I have a question, if I may, Mr. Chairman, of, you know, you mentioned that the monkfish days at sea not being utilized. Is anybody utilizing their own allocation of days at sea? I know the answer, so.
You're asking the full allocation.
Right. In other words, it really is irrelevant whether the overall allocation of monkfish days at sea are being used if some individuals are maxing out on their days at sea.
I don't have the numbers of who's maxing out their days at sea or not. The there is a table in the existing EA Figure 5 that indicates the monkfish days at sea charge frequency among permits, and you know, one interpretation of that, I didn't develop that, is that the maximum day at sea usage was 18.5 days. There may be individuals that have maxed out their allocation. I'm just not aware of vessel-specific allocation. But one thing to keep in mind when you're talking about day at sea utilization rate is that we have approximately 50% of the permits are active. We have a very small portion of active permits compared to who has issued a monkfish permit throughout the fishery. And so only a subset of those allocated or issued permits are actively fishing. And the number varies, but it's averaged about 81 vessels in the north, and it's averaged about 180 or so, 160 in the south. So, you know, with that, there's going to be a big difference between the days allocated and the days used, just for the sheer fact that there's a good proportion of the fishery that's just not fishing. So for those that are active, it does suggest that there is a good number in the northern area that are using upwards of 50% of their allocation.
May I follow up with another question, not of Doug, but could you put the slide up, please, that showed about the market projection of higher landings would show lower prices? Yeah, that's it. I have a real problem when you try to put up projections that are projecting out what's going to happen in a commodity market that's international, and it's a very makeup. Because you can have many, many situations where less fish means less price. You can have many situations where more fish means more price. And this has been going on forever that we try to do these type of things, and it just drives me crazy that that's meaningless, truly meaningless. For instance, had we have taken this approach in scallops when we kept upping the quota of scallops, we would have said, no, don't do that because we don't want the price to go down. Well, guess what? The price went up as the landings went up. Who would have projected that? Nobody could have done that. And, you know, we have a report on the groundfish now for 2012 that shows less landings with lower prices, right? Now that is just the opposite of what you're trying to say here. And this is an international commodity. It's sold in Europe. There's so many Brazil produces to the same market. If they have a lot of monkfish, we don't have a good price. If the exchange fluctuations on currencies goes up or down, we don't get a good price. It really has nothing to do with what's happening in our own little backyard pond and a very small amount of fish in the world market. So this type of thing just drives me. The only thing this can do is cost you the potential to have good revenue, such as scallops, right? If you do something like this, if you're trying to hold down a catch because you think the price might come down. So in hearing all this, I may not have to come back up here. I see no justification whatsoever to not going with your own PDT's recommendation of going to 53 days, the full recommendation 3. I've heard nothing of why you would limit somebody those 13 days. You know, the only one that they tried to get was the market, which I think is debunked, and the other one was effort shift. Well, I can't for the life of me figure out if you give somebody more days in the north, they're going to have a tendency to shift to the south. So I think it would be just the opposite argument, that if they have more in the north, they're going to stay in the north. They won't shift. So with that, I just recommend that you take the PDT's recommendation of item 3, unrevised. Thank you.
Maggie, you have a question? Then let's put a motion up on the board.
Motion number one, on behalf of the committee, that the council select as its preferred alternative for the northern management area the following management measures: 40 days at sea with an incidental trip limit when fishing under a ground fish day at sea of 600 pounds per day for vessels with sea permits and 500 pounds per day for vessels with D permits. This is a committee revised alternative 3.
This is a committee motion that does not need a second. Terry.
I have a motion substitute.
Put her up.
Just change 40 to 46, the original committee motion that I made at the committee.
Seconded by Vincent. Council discussion, Laura.
Yeah, I wanted to comment. We heard earlier from John about how Magnuson forced us to take a really hard vote here, and that by dictating that we have to rebuild at a certain time, we made some hard decisions that will hopefully bring back the stock. But unfortunately, my experience with this council has been that we ignored the other part of our national standards, which acts us for optimal yield. And I would hope that as we sit here for council members, we would feel as compelled to achieve optimal yield in our fisheries as we do to shut down our fisheries. And so for that reason, I would support this motion. I'd also just like to speak briefly to what Jimmy said, that the idea of consistency of supply also matters. So when you are looking at markets and when you're trying to decide about fish to promote to your customers, the ability to say that that is going to be consistently available is important. And so you can drive demand and increase pricing by having a more steadily available product, which would come about by having more days where boats are out fishing. So I wanted to add that to the economic impact from a processor perspective. Thank you.
Terry, to your motion.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of discussion around the table, and we had a lot of discussion at the Monkfish Committee. You know, my personal preference would be to go with the 53 days at sea. That seems to give our partners to the south a lot of heartburn. I thought this was a good compromise. 46 days was a good compromise that they would get a 15% increase in days at sea with their 32. We'd get a 15% increase in our days at sea to 46, and everybody goes home happy. That isn't the way it worked out at the committee, but I had sent Doug a list of questions, and I think most of that has come out during this discussion. One thing that he had said was the CPUE with concerns with the stock. Could you elaborate on that for us, Doug, please?
Yeah, as Terry said, he sent me a number of questions, and as Kate reiterated, that we tried to look into putting context to this situation, what the historic practice in the fishery is, what the motivations were, what are the patterns in terms of days at sea usage and vessel operations, and whether there's a shift in effort. Regarding the one of the concerns raised at the committee was that the stock is not as healthy in the north as what would be suggested in the current stock assessment. And so one thing that we wanted to look into was catch per unit effort. And if catch per unit effort is decreasing, that might validate some of the concerns expressed at the committee. Unfortunately, I didn't have the degree of information that to make a really precise evaluation of catch per unit effort by this meeting, but my intention is to do so by the Mid-Atlantic Council meeting. To put it into context, the current biomass in the north is at or around BMSY, so we're right at where we should be in terms of the Magnuson. And in the south, we're at 140%, give or take, of BMSY. So the stock is relatively healthy according to our biomass reference points. Now, there are some indications of declining biomass in the south, but in the north, it's you know, pretty stable based on the updated assessment. So the catch per unit effort might give some ground truth to what concerns have been expressed at the committee, but I don't have precise enough numbers to definitively tell you whether it's increasing, decreasing, or stable. All other parameters are suggesting that, you know, the landings have been relatively consistent over time. They've been tracking almost year in, year out. They've been tracking the same patterns. I don't see a dramatic shift in landing patterns year in, year out to suggest that landings are decreasing year after year. They're just staying about the same, roughly.
Okay. Given the time of day and that we still have dogfish specs and skate report to come up, does anyone on the council want to speak against this motion to substitute? Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kate, if you could put the slide where you had the OFL and the ABC and the ACT up there. It was pointed out that, you know, there's a huge uncertainty buffer, but most of that uncertainty buffer lies between the OFL and the ACL. Very little of it lies between the ACT and the ACL. So, you know, by adding these extra days at sea, I think we increase the risk that we may exceed the ACL and flirt with the possibility of AMs kicking in. So for that reason, I'm going to oppose this motion. So.
Is anybody else opposed? Mark.
I oppose as well for the same reasons that Mark Alexander articulated.
PK? You.
Yeah, just because I had a question on the motion there. Where did the B category, I don't think B was in there. That's 600, 500? Not that it makes a big deal, I just was curious.
Kate?
Yeah, I can clarify this. You can't use an A or B permit in the northern area. So originally, the original documents, all of both areas had A, B, C, and D. We clarified just this past week, and so I apologize. The distribution documents had A and B. It really is just C and D.
Mary Beth?
So that may have addressed the concern I have, because in general I do support the motion, even though I've raised my hand opposing the motion. That the issue that Drew brought up, if you can't use the, is it the A or the C? Now I'm confused. C. So it's really the increase in the incidental trip limit in the northern area is for the A permits only, and the C. No, could you just run through that for me?
Yeah, the increased incidental trip limits would apply to C permits and D permits. So C would go up to 600 pounds per day, and D would go up to 500 pounds per day.
Okay, and so the scallop one is the C permit. It could be used in the northern management area, except that this doesn't apply. And so my concern would be, my understanding for this framework is it's important to move it so that it can be implemented May 1 for the fishing year. And if, you know, what this was before, the difference between the two, the scallop gear and the groundfish gear, was that the groundfish could land up to 300 pounds as long as the 300 pounds didn't exceed the 25% of total catch. The scallop landing limit was 300 pounds. So in this case, you're going from, for one gear type, you're allowing the up to double and the other to remain at the previous level. So I think it does raise a concern. And if it were to be determined after the meeting today that it's a reallocation to one gear type and not the other, and that's not allowed in a framework, what does that do to the framework? I mean, does it then not get disapproved for the C permit in the northern area? Does the framework not move forward? Does nothing get implemented on May 1? Gene, do you think you can answer any of those questions? I mean, I think it's of significant concern if people really want this in place on May 1.
It can't be done by framework. It can't be approved. And I think Doug helped explain how there are conceptual differences between scallopers and groundfish vessels, and how these
access opportunities, harvesting opportunities are defined.
So in follow-up to that, I mean, access opportunities, but one is up, they were at the same level except one was limited, more limited, and now we're doubling the one that was more limited and leaving the other at the same based on gear type. So I thought that was a significant concern that was raised, and so I think people have to be aware, if you're going to do that, that there's a possibility that it would be disapproved.
Mike?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for a little context, the emergency rule that currently applies at the request of the New England Council, the incidental limits for C and D vessels on a ground fish day at sea, the northern management area, are infinity. So this, what this motion does, as far as the trip limits go, is ratchet back from the current emergency rule that the agency implemented at the request of the council.
Does anybody in the audience want to speak against the motion? Maggie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate Mr. Alexander and Mr. Balzano's attempts to compromise. They're great at that. I'm not so great at that. The PDT came forward with three options for combinations of trip limits and days at sea allocations that their analysis suggests would allow the landings to come closer to the TAL than they currently are. So, you know, I've never really understood how they do these combinations, but generally, in general, if you have more days at sea, you have less possession limit. If you have a higher possession limit, you have fewer days at sea. So if you take their number three option and you reduce the days at sea from 53 to 40 or 46 or whatever, then there should be some corresponding increase in the possession limit, either on the groundfish days or on the monkfish days. But that concept, that idea, has not been discussed. We're simply saying we don't like that number of days at sea, for we think that there's going to be some shift in effort, even though there's been no evidence of that happening. So this motion is certainly better than the committee motion, but, you know, I would ask the council members, you know, when the science says you can have this, why wouldn't we have this? Do we only die by the science, or do we live by the science? The science says this combination is acceptable, and yet we want to reduce it. So that's problematic from the industry's perspective. And I just, while I'm at the microphone, I'll comment to this differentiation between groundfish possession limit and scallop possession limit. From the beginning of the plan, that's why monkfish is linked to groundfish days at sea. It was understood that this was a component of the groundfish trawl fishery in the northern fishery management area. And I believe that on day one of implementation, I know on day one of implementation of the plan that the groundfish boats had no position, they had no limit on the amount of monkfish they could have on a groundfish day at sea. And I believe the scallop fleet was always limited to some trip limit when they were fishing on their scallop days at sea. So there has always been that differentiation. There has been since day one, so there's nothing new with this particular option that's come before you in terms of that particular question. So I guess to make it short, you know, this motion is better than the committee motion, but I still don't understand why you wouldn't allow the full recommendation of the PTT and option three. Certainly, we need this increased possession limit. Hard enough to explain to people how we're going from no limit to some limit when we're still not catching the TAL. So let's try to get to the full recommendation of the PDT. Thank you.
Other comments from the audience? Drew.
Driven Cave Fishery Survival Fund. We are opposed to this motion. We would much prefer to see alternative three that came out of the PDT. I think it's important to note that the PDT, when they raised it to 600, raised it for everybody. And if you can raise it for everybody, why wouldn't you raise it for anybody? What is the rationale that the council is providing to only raise it for groundfish? You can't do anything just for economics. And so is it only to provide a benefit to one group over another? That is not a rationale that's allowed under the Act. So I haven't heard a single rationale as to why you can't raise it for scallops, seeing as your own PDT, so the science says you can. I would argue that it does create a differentiation and a change that is significant within this fishery. I understand other people's arguments, but I would argue that it does, and that this is not something that's frameworkable. So why even toy with that idea? Take this issue off the table. Take this issue off the table, and your science says you can do it. Raise up the incidental limit for everybody and treat all sea permits as equal sea permits. Thank you.
Back to the council on the motion to substitute. Terry.
Yeah, I want to. Could Kate put that ABC, ACL, ACT, TAL form back up again? Right now we're fishing at 67% of the TAL, right? We are nowhere near, with the uncertainty buffers and stuff, we're nowhere near 7,500 tons in the north, the ABC. We're nowhere near it. We're half of that. I mean, I agree that we should be going to 53 days, but that's not, under this scenario, it's not going to happen. I don't see it happening here today. So, you know, I offered the compromise to 46. But, you know, to say that there, people are concerned about being too close to the ABC and the ACT, we're only at 50% of that, if we use every day. So I don't think that argument holds water.
Further comment? John.
I just want to say that I agree with the rationale put forth by Laura Ramston. I don't say that very often, do I? That's why I wanted to say it. And am, for those reasons, supportive of the motion.
Okay. Are there any final comments? Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wonder if there is any follow-up discussion on the differentiation between the different Category C permit holders, that is, those held and used on groundfish DAS versus scallop permit holder.
Tom.
To that point, I might suggest, given where we are, maybe we could vote on the substitute and then you know, we could discuss that issue if someone cared to amend the motion at that point instead of trying to have it now, just from a process standpoint.
Everybody good with that? Okay. Thank you, Tom. On the motion to substitute, those who support the motion of the board, please indicate so. Those opposed? You're opposed, David?
No.
Okay. And are there any abstentions? The motion to substitute carries 13 to 4. David?
Yes. I'm going to make a motion to substitute back in the main motion. So actually it's I'm very receptive to some of the arguments that have been made by those in the audience. Maggie made a very good point. Others did as well regarding the plan development team recommendation to us. I favor the larger amount of days, the amount that is 53. I still don't understand the argument as to why going with a higher amount of days at sea would lead to a shift of effort to the south. Don't quite get that. But what I do get is that we need to maximize the benefit of monkfish to those individual fishermen who are actually directing on monkfish, and I'm speaking specifically about smaller vessels, you know, day boat vessels, vessels that are not taking monkfish incidentally. I consider this to be an important important source of income for those vessels, smaller vessels, for example, that are now on the edge or have fallen over the edge regarding groundfish failure, smaller vessels. The groundfish performance report and other documents indicate that they're the ones that are suffering the most from the lack of groundfish or low ACLs. We've already heard that with the 600, 500 for the permits under incidental landing limit, that it's pretty much a directed fishery or can be a directed fishery. It's sort of a hidden directed fishery that's actually out in the open. I therefore would like to provide those individuals who are not going to be taking monkfish incidentally but need to direct on monkfish on this resource that is healthy, and again, consistent with the plan development team, give them more days when they can actually target and land monkfish. So I would move to amend, I guess, to simply amend, to amend the 40 days, the 40 days, it's not 40 days, 46, right, it's a 46 now. I would amend the 46 to make it 53, which is alternative 3 for the northern management area.
Second by Mary Beth. Council discussion, Mary Beth.
So just for clarification, as a seconder of the motion, it seems more direct to resolve a number of the issues that have come up to just substitute the revised alternative 3 for the original alternative 3, which resolves the issue raised by Drew and also would be consistent with Maggie's comments. And I think it would be worthwhile if we had the PDT chair just reiterate the advice provided for alternative 3 to make it clear, since that's been referenced several times. But would the maker of the motion just be happy with that change, have it just be substituted from the revised alternative 3 to the original alternative 3?
You feeling friendly, David?
I thought that's what I did.
It was just, I thought that was what you were doing, but it was just slightly unclear, so I thought a clarification.
That's basically what I've done, because maybe I've misunderstood, but the difference between alternative 3 and the revised alternative 3 is the numbers of days at sea for the directed fishery, correct?
Well, except for the fact that Kate indicated to us that the revised one had a typo in it on the page as you read it. So that is the way that the original alternative 3 reads is correct. And the revised one, however, was more limiting to, I don't know how to describe it, but I think it would be best if Kate did that. But, Kate, if you could, just give us the recommendation by the PDT relative to the original alternative 3, I think it'd be helpful.
So I think that there is some confusion. The original alternative 3 was 600 pounds for sea permits, 500 pounds for D permits, while fishing under a groundfish day at sea, status quo for others. Maintain status quo daily limits for the directed fishery of 1250 for A and C permits, 600 for B and D permits, and 53 days at sea. So, and just to clarify, scallop permits were never going to increase.
Terry.
Yeah, I truly think 53 is the number, but we need to get this framework in place by May 1st. And the only way it's going to get in place by May 1st is if it gets passed at the Mid-Atlantic when it gets down there in a couple of weeks. And my number was a compromise, I think a compromise that would be better with a 15% increase in the north and a 15% increase in the south. That wouldn't risk that going through. I'm certainly open to the 53, but I just want people to know what the 53 will do. It could jeopardize the plan being put in place by May, the framework being put in place by May 1st. And there is the Mid-Atlantic uses their monkfish days mostly in the fall and the winter, so I don't think they don't need it in place for May 1st. Whereas in the north, we need it in place for May 1st. So.
John, then Frank.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow with what Terry just said. I mean, I certainly, in a perfect world, would be supportive of the 53, and those that want to roll the dice and go down to the mid and risk getting it kicked out and miss the summer fishing and be here next fall, that's a, you know, a risk analysis that people can take. But I know that this 46 was is a delicate balance between the 40, which passed the committee, and the 53, which is the preferred, the alternative 3. So I just, you know, want that on the table now prior to the vote, that we could be back here in September. I maybe would want to ask Gene a question. One, it's kind of a two-part. One, I think it's just under the law highly unlikely that that emergency action would be extended again the April 30th. But more, what exactly happens whenever we kick down to the Mid-Atlantic after this meeting? It's going to be passed verbatim. Can they make changes to it? Is there any back and forth type of exchange?
And Doug, correct me if I'm wrong, both councils have to agree to the measures. This is a joint plan. So if they don't accept this, then we're back and forth, back to this council.
Frank,
that was my point. David?
Yeah, well, I guess I need a clarification then. I wasn't at the Monkfish committee meeting. I assume, therefore, that the Mid-Atlantic Council has already, at previous meetings, expressed some concern about the larger number of days at sea, and they would prefer a lower number, and or fishermen advisors from the Mid-Atlantic area have said, no way, no how, 53, make it some other number. Have we already gotten that sort of advice from the council itself and from advisors, or are we guessing as to what the Mid-Atlantic Council's position will eventually be on this? I just need to have that clarified.
John?
I would say that the sense of the meeting and the advisors at the Monkfish meeting was, in fact, 53 would not be acceptable. I know maybe Doug could talk. There's been some exchange at the staff level with the Mid-Atlantic staff. 41 at the, you know, the preferred alternative we put forward originally today is what came out of the committee, because an attempt at 46 failed at the committee level. So I think there is a sense that 53 is not the number.
Did you have a follow up, Terry? You had your hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to reiterate that you know, 53 got a lot of pushback. This increases just about the same percentage, the North and the South agency. They get a 15% increase. We get a 15% increase. And, you know, that's kind of where the 46 number came from, Dave. I think that's more acceptable to the South. But, you know, so that's why I'd like to see it stay at 46 so we have a better chance of getting the framework in place. And I do feel bad that the people who are actually utilizing their days at sea in the North are being punished that way. Basically, it's a punishment because they could have another week's worth of fishing for. But it's a joint plan. Needs to be a compromise between the two councils. So that's the only way it'll fly.
Rick?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To be clear, you know, we're not taking any hostages here. I think, I'm inclined to defer to your committee members' assessment of their characterization of how the committee discussions have gone. I'm not a member of that committee, but obviously there's been a lot of background discussion both at the AP and the committee level about, you know, what would be the right balance to strike on the specifications. But, you know, it does seem that as the maker of the motion indicated, there's a similar proportional increase in DAS going with the revised motion that was up there. I guess that was 46 days.
Vincent?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to support Terry's comments here. I agree that the science says it's 53 days. It should be 53 days. But we spent the majority of the Monkfish Committee meeting debating this issue right here. And this was a compromise that we could come up with. And it was 3-3-1 was the vote. This was the 46 days was the committee motion, and it was amended to 40 days. And we felt that that was the best compromise since we went up 15% in the south. We'll go up 15% in the north of the days. Thank you very much.
Okay, is there a need for any further discussion? Okay. On the motion to amend, those who support the motion of the board, please indicate so. And those who are opposed. The motion fails, 1 to 16. We're back to the main motion. Those who support, once Karen gets us there, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Yeah, it's unanimous. The motion carries 16-0. Okay. Mr. Monkfish, Chair, you think this next motion in the southern area will be contentious?
I don't think so.
Well, let's do the next decision, then take a break before we go in the next part of case presentation.
Second motion, on behalf of the committee, that the council select its preferred alternative for the southern management area, the following management measures: 32 days at sea with a daily landing limit of 610 pounds per day for vessels with A and C permits, and 500 pounds per day for vessels with B, D, and H permits. It's the committee's revised alternative two.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Is there a council discussion? Terry.
Yeah, I support it wholeheartedly, and I mean, we only had one southern area, one mid-Atlantic management person there, and he put the motion forward. Seemed to be a compromise they'd worked out amongst the fleet down there. That's what they want. They're well within their catch limits. I think we should just vote it up.
Before we do that, are there any comments from the audience? Seeing none, we're back to the council, to the motion on the board. Those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion is unanimous. It carries 16-0. Let's take a 10-minute break. We've got a quorum, so why don't you start? Yeah.
Okay, the next issue is days at sea usage requirements. There's two alternatives here, the no action and alternative two, which was slightly revised by the committee. The no action, so the current regulations, vessels allocated both monkfish and groundfish days at sea must use the days at sea in combination. Once a vessel's allocation of groundfish days at sea is used up, only then may a vessel use monkfish-only days at sea. That's the no action, that's status quo regulations. The revision would be that vessels allocated both monkfish and groundfish days at sea would be able to use their monkfish-only days at sea at any time of year, and the committee revised this to clarify that this would only apply to the southern management area. On top of that, once a vessel's allocation of groundfish days at sea equals the remaining monkfish days at sea, the vessel must then use both monkfish and groundfish days at sea in combination. The goal here really was that the current requirement to use both monkfish and groundfish days at sea in combination prevented efficient utilization of the allocations. It really prevented vessels from specifically targeting monkfish early in the fishing year and saving groundfish days until later in the year. So changing this, and it was the committee's preference to select alternative two with the modification that it applies only to the southern management area. And this really, this modification to the days at sea usage would be beneficial specifically in southern New England, allowing that seasonal targeting.
Questions for Kate? Mary Beth.
So could you just elaborate a little on why it is for one area and not the other? I mean, what the rationale that may have been provided?
I believe it's not applicable in the northern area.
Doug, or Kate?
Sorry about that. Just to Mary Beth's point, build on Kate's point, there's very few opportunities to use a monkfish only day in the northern area, whereas there's plenty of opportunity to use a monkfish only day in the south. And the reason being is monkfish only days can only be used in areas that don't have a high bycatch of groundfish. And so obviously in the southern area there's there's more areas where you can have a reduced catch of groundfish. And so this measure basically allows the directed monkfish fleet to direct on monkfish at the beginning of the year before groundfish start percolating in towards the late summer, early fall. So it enables them to maximize the value of their monkfish allocation by enabling them to target monkfish earlier in the year and groundfish later in the year.
Mike.
So I understand that explanation, basically that in the north there would be very few opportunities where you could use only a monkfish day. But that doesn't explain to me why we would want to complicate the motion and the action by not allowing that if by chance it occurred. I mean, it sounds like whether you put this reference to southern only in or not, the outcome will be the same. So why not just treat both areas the same and let the nature of the fishery dictate how these days get used.
Other questions or comments? Any comments or questions from the audience? John.
There's a motion on behalf of the committee that the council select as its preferred alternative the modification to days at sea usage requirements to allow the use of monkfish-only days at sea at any time during the fishing year in the southern management area.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. David?
Yeah, I move to amend. And the amendment would be in the southern and northern management areas. To be consistent with the point made by Dr. Sissonwine, I think it makes a great deal of sense. So why not have it in both? See if it can apply.
Is there a second to the motion to amend by Mary Beth? Is there further discussion on the motion to amend? Any discussion from the audience? Back to the council. On the motion to amend, those support it, please indicate so. Motion carries, 17-0. We're back to the main motion as amended. Those who support the main motion as amended, please indicate so. The motion carries, 17-0. Back to Kate.
So the final issue, this is decision number 4. And this relates to the permit category H boundary. Currently, in the no action alternative, vessels issued a monkfish category H permit may only fish on a monkfish day at sea south of 3840, which is the red line in the map on the screen. Alternative 2, which was preferred by the AP and the committee, is that vessels issued a monkfish category H permit may fish on a monkfish day at sea throughout the southern fishery management area, and that is the black line that separates the north from the south. They would be free to fish anywhere within that range. Currently, there are some severe limits to the fishing access for the category H permits within their boundary underneath the 3840 due to bycatch restrictions. So what this action would do is maximize opportunities to those vessels to fish throughout the entire southern fishery range. In terms of input, the AP indicated that there is only 2 or 3 permits in this category that would actually fish in the northern region expansion. And there was discussion, and regional office staff clarified that you can't eliminate category permit H in a framework, and you can also not eliminate the boundary completely. So really what we need to do is move the line. That's really the only option to allow this.
Question for Kate. Any questions from the audience? John.
A motion on behalf of the committee that the council select the following management measure. For purposes of permit category H boundary, move alternative 2 as the preferred alternative. Vessels issue a monkfish category H permit may fish on a monkfish day at sea throughout the southern management area.
Committee motion does not need a second. Is there any council discussion? Is there any discussion from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council, to the motion on the board. Those who support it, please indicate so. Motion carries 17-0. Okay, John, we're on to your favorite motion.
This is the final motion that the council submit framework 8 to the Monkfish FMP as amended to the regional office for review and approval.
Seconded by Tom Dempsey and Tom Neese. Question?
I'm kind of wondering if we need to modify the language slightly, that we really shouldn't submit until the mid-votes. We'd like to.
Well, I don't know about that.
Votes for approval?
This language work with everybody? Okay. We've beat this to death all afternoon. Rick?
Mr. Chairman, to be clear, you're submitting that to GARFO?
Somebody. Okay. To the motion of the board, those who support the motion of the board, please indicate so. And those who are abstaining. The motion carries 16-01. Congratulations, Mr. Monkfish Chair.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Dr. O'Keefe and Doug Crystal and Chris Kellogg and Rachel Neal, for their help over the last couple of months.
Okay. Dogfish specs are next. Thanks, Kate.
Terry, we're going to try and connect with Jim Armstrong over the phone. 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 Jim Armstrong over